basically all you need to have a next level live social experience in the comfort of your living room. And this is really around the corner. So I can't be more excited because it's finally at reach when for so long it just wasn't.
Hey, what's going on? I hope you are well as always. So this week's episode is all about where we are right now with virtual reality. Lots of different opinions on this topic, but there is something really major that is about to happen with VR, which is likely to be a big inflection point. It's called cloud rendering, which we talk about simply on the show, but it solves one of the key problems of getting amazing looking live immersive events and content to everyday users. So we're genuinely about to take a giant leap closer to the Ready Player One style future, and we'll explain why. Our guest on this episode is the brilliant Laurent Skelly, who is the founder and CEO of Red Pill VR, and someone who has been building in the VR space for 30 years. He was instrumental in introducing, developing, and fielding military simulation systems to the US and Canadian Army, and he was also a key catalyst behind the origins of Oculus VR too. Red Pill VR are a virtual reality platform that are creating groundbreaking interactive social experiences focused around music and live events. They genuinely are unreal. They recently just had Paul Oakenfold do one as well. If you picture the most incredible out of this world immersive virtual festival, you're on the right lines. This was a massively valuable chat, and you'll leave fully understanding what is coming next. So thank you, Laurent, for coming on the show. A very quick reminder, if you're enjoying the show, just to hit the follow button on your platform really helps it grow. Always appreciated. And finally, as always, nothing in this episode is financial or investment advice. Always do your own research. And with that said, let's dive into this week's episode. Laurent, great to have you on the show. Thank you very much for coming on. I think there's no one better to chat to about the VR landscape and everything that's happening right now. So yeah, appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
Thanks, Luke. Great to be here.
Good stuff. All right. So I reckon, you know, there'll be a split in the audience listening. Those who love VR think it's the most magical and best thing ever, which is absolutely me. I'm always trying to wave the flag for VR. And then there'll be some people, friends of mine as well, who are, you know, skeptical about its day-to-day role, maybe had an experience in the early days and it didn't click for them or whatever it is. So it'll be interesting to chat to you and kind of break down what's going on. But I like to get stuck in straight away, and it'd be great just to nerd out a little bit to begin with in terms of talking about maybe your best VR experience of late. You're at the cutting edge of this industry. I can certainly talk about some of mine, but what's some just the coolest stuff you've done recently? Because I think that's a nice place to start.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, what I love about VR is the social and immersive and experiential aspect of it, right? So clearly, when you go to your location base, you have more means to express a virtual world and add motion. So I personally love these void location base where you're moving around and you have essentially even more sense of immersion. So this is kind of, I've done a lot of location base and in the military simulation. And so, you have more tools to really immerse a group of individuals inside a shared virtual world. And I'm personally a big fan of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I've done some location-based stuff. One that really blew my mind was you were in VR, obviously, and it was part of a kind of immersive theater experience. So you were physically walking around a space as well. But they even mapped some of the physical parts in the real world. So for example, I was on a boat and I was in VR and it was War of the Worlds themed. So there was kind of aliens attacking, but I was also in a physical boat. So the whole thing was moving and it was mapped to the experience. So if I put my hand down to touch the boat, it was really there. So I've been to a few of these and they are really amazing.
But it's very interesting when you start to add just a little bit of additional stimulation. You know, I remember was showing this prototype VR experience with like a spider going up from the hand to the head to my wife. And I just barely touched her hair when the spider was in her head and she just jumped because this tiny little bit of additional stimulation, and then you're really cross this line and you're fully immersed, and you know your sense of being there is overwhelmed. So we're obviously pushing for the creation of shared presence and presence. So when you could add a little bit more than what you're currently able to do at the consumer level, you know, it helps bring it through the finish line.
Yeah, absolutely. I would definitely dive into Red Pill and all the amazing social music experiences that you're doing. I bet your wife loved that, by the way. That sounds like she had a good time there. I've also heard people talk about when you can trick senses and you know, obviously VR with you're tricking your visual immersion and spatial sound, and also with haptic suits and everything going on there at the really cutting edge where you can feel what's happening in the world, raindrops and the weather and that kind of thing. It can even trick your brain into simulating a sense that might not be there, like so smell. I was chatting to someone who had all of the other gear, and because all those senses were being tricked, he began to smell the rain because your brain was so used to it. So yeah, interesting. All right, I know VR has a long history, much of which you've been a part of and been crucial in helping kind of bring VR to where it is now. Maybe you could just run us through some of the most interesting points in a quick summary, maybe a minute or two, just because, especially with the military and stuff like that, I think that's a part that people don't know about, and I'd love to do a quick overview of the history if that's possible. I know there's been a lot.
Well, I mean, I jumped in VR in 1992. It was pretty much when Jean Lanier was closing shop at VPL. There's been, innovators in VR since Evan Sutherland in 1968 with his first head-mount display. So I think the VR finally took off in the location-based space in the early 90s. There's the first deployment of virtuality and virtual world entertainment and a bunch of other location bays that started to take off. At the time, the best VR experience were based on supercomputers, these Evan and Sutherland supercomputers, these Reality Engine 2, Silicon Graphic workstations. And, I was always thinking that VR had to be built around PCs and around game engines for obvious reason of leveraging a whole bunch of content development and engines and infrastructure that really would allow to not have an entire proprietary solution end to end. But in the early days, it wasn't obvious. So, eventually the location-based entertainment kind of had a first start in the first 10 years of my career from, 92 to 2002. And I was publishing the VR resource guide of all the VR systems, all the VR locations, and it died out pretty aggressively by the end of that 10-year journey. The consoles arrived on the market. There's a number of business models and repeat business that were not attained. The cost of content development and product development and user experience was just not there to have this as a sustainable market. I personally pivoted to the military simulation, again, another specialty use case of VR, but another social use case of VR as well. And so I spent about 10 years building military simulation solution, the hardware, the software, the middleware, the application layer, the content, but based on game engines, because I was of the belief that building VR on top game engines, had to be the foundation to finally get to a consumer market. So, a lot of these systems were expensive, obviously all custom made. In our case, they were built on top of the Unreal Engine. So we took America's Army and made it a training solution. And we licensed Unreal Engine 3 and build our own content and kind of pushed all of the aspects to create a compelling multi-user experience. Ironically, in 2012, at the very tail end of that journey, I built a wireless head mount display using 60 gigahertz wireless technology. So you had a completely detached sense of full body tracking, not tethered to the PC that's processing it. From an industry standpoint, Oculus, obviously knows that they finally delivered presence. And that was the biggest breakthrough to make VR finally comfortable, low cost, wide field of view. And ever since, we've always thought the VR industry was going to move faster than it has. We've had this this rise of interest in the early days. And I think finally now with the standalone devices and the ability to deliver comfortable, low-cost VR experiences, the next phase that I find fascinating is the ability to have the best of both worlds, but having the cloud rendering and essentially the benefit of all this infrastructure that's been built on standalone devices to deliver both visual fidelity and the low cost sense of comfort and shared presence.
Yeah, it's a good, that's a great wrap-up of the history of it, and takes us to where we are now. And we'll talk about the cloud rendering in a second and explain that, because that's a real leap forward and what you're doing at Red Pill, which is fascinating. So definitely going to get stuck into that shortly. Now, it does feel, at least to me and probably to most people, that there is a sort of tipping point, and you mentioned Oculus, now Meta Quest 2 particularly. It's a standalone headset, doesn't need to be tethered to a computer, doesn't even need sensors in the room, and that has taken off, right? I don't know if there's any stats you have to hand, but I know they outsold Xbox consoles, I think, last year for the first time, which was pretty crazy. So we are at this point where we're starting to get past enthusiasts and into the hands of consumers and it be really enjoyed and easy to use and stuff. What's next? How do we get there? And how do you view the kind of next step? And is VR going to find its way into real consumer everyday life relatively soon, do you think?
The reason I got in VR to begin with is because I the way I think about this is really the first time where technology essentially goes away. You've got a technology that's compatible with human biology. And getting to that place where it completely goes away, is a journey. And it's been a journey for me for 30 years and for others longer and for a lot of users and developers more recently. And we're finally getting to this place where a lot of these frictions are progressively removed. And that's why we're migrating from an early adopter community of developers and users to something that's a kind most of a mass market. So we're in the progression of removing these frictions. These frictions comes in many forms. You know, one of them is the form factor, clearly, right? The lighter and the more balanced the headset and the most comfortable and the lower the price point, the more engaging and attractive it's going to be. Some comes in the form of the actual pain point to create the content. And it is a very technical field. It's harder than video games because of the optimization requirements, especially when you go into a standalone device. So you get very high friction, and so you're finally getting to a place where some of the tools are more polished and more powerful. The entire monetization because of the user base becomes more attractive, so you can justify spending money and development to reach a larger market. And the library of the content is starting to grow from the user, so there's a reason why you'd want to go into this brand new format. I think that from my standpoint, it's always been the experiential and the social aspect of this immersive format that was always fascinating me. And, you know, the entire career, all I've done is multi-user VR, because I really believe in the social power of this immersive medium. So it's clear to me that when you can continue to lower the friction and deliver an experience that is of a drastic quality level and allow, in my case, performers to actually create meaningful environments and meaningful performances to, you know, redefine what an event is, you're going to have, you know, one of the killer categories for this medium. So I think the attractiveness of VR is going in the right direction. You're right. I don't want to have the exact sales stats from all the different platforms. There's all kinds of numbers floating around. There's nothing official, as you know. But I think we're finally getting to a place where the frictions for content creation, the friction from a cost standpoint, and the attractiveness from the users is reaching a tipping point. So I think over the next few years, we're going to see a continuous exponential adoption of the technology in a number of different verticals. Certainly, gaming and experiential events being one of them.
Yeah, and let's dive into what you're doing at Red Pill in a second, because it certainly hits that category of social music experiences. There's lots of use cases for VR that are already happening. Simulation, you mentioned, in the military and with other workplaces in industry. Education's a massive one, of kids being able to be, you know, with their tutor in a science lesson and be able to pull out the heart from a human body and stretch it to 6 feet tall and stuff like that seems an obvious, really amazing use case. Obviously, gaming has its own stories and immersive story content, and then social experiences. I'm guessing I know the answer, and you've kind of mentioned it, in that's where you're really honing in with Red Pill, is in the social experiences, and particularly within music. Do you think that is the key use case? These use cases are all equally valid. How do you think about it? Why did you kind of double down on social music experiences?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to have every single use case you mentioned, you know, are legitimate large use case, but some have more pain points than others. You want to do amazing educational content. Well, you're going to have tools that allow you to make that content cheap enough so you could have enough of that content with a variety of content for it to be financially viable. So that goes back to the tool sets and the ability to create compelling, engaging content into the format. Storytelling is another, you know, beautiful format for VR, but you have a lot of spending to create and tell a story. You know, how many times are you going to see that story? So the ratio between the investment in content and the monetization of that specific format is also a function of the cost to create that content and the user community that's equipped with the medium. So we, for a number of reasons, I thought the social music experience was a killer category, one of which is because it connected with the two things I love the most, which is VR and music. So, you know, when you're aligned with what you love, you could work 18-hour days. And then the second is, when you build a virtual venue, the same investment in asset can really deliver lots of different content, because the performer, the visual show, the activities that happen inside that virtual venue is really the draw, right? So you have a different ratio between the content that you're creating and how much value you can get out of that content. So that's one aspect. The second is, you know, my belief system, as I said earlier, is that I think VR is a social tool. And so, you know, building killer social use cases seems to be the direction that I needed to focus my efforts since I spent my career in it. The reality is that the way I look at this is pretty simple. There's a number of killer categories. This is one of them. There's many others. That category is social music experiences, live events. I think it requires a spectacle. A spectacle requires visual fidelity, audio quality, a richness in the look of the avatar. It requires a real-time processing of a lot of data that's coming live from the physical world that's translated inside this virtual venue and this virtual event. And when you combine all of that, you have a computation that's far in excess of what you have currently on a standalone device, and Moore's Law will not help. You have essentially a format that some gamers might be equipped with high-end GPUs to, you know, locally process, but most music lovers or event lovers are not, which is why I've started to talk earlier in the cloud rendering aspect. And so we get to a place where there is a killer categories that, you know, right now is really not properly served in VR. There is an infrastructure for communication and for cloud rendering with GPUs on the cloud that's heavily being invested into, from the fiber optics to the high speed internet connectivity to the 5G to a number of GPUs right now that are mainly used for either AI processing or cloud rendering for enterprise use cases. And we're just about to enter this phase where that infrastructure is going to be used for consumer VR. And if you look at the cloud rendering, I guess, adoption for interactive content, a service like GeForce Now went from 1 million to 25 million registered users just the last 2 years alone. Even though cloud rendering for video game has been a topic for many years, you know, as a matter of fact, when I introduced Brendan and Palmer to start Oculus in 2012, Brendan was selling Gaikai to Sony, a cloud rendering solution. But the adoption of the technology, you know, really hasn't been a reality until more recently. So we're getting to a place where the infrastructure, the actual cloud rendering framework for non-VR consumer use case and VR enterprise use case are finally getting adopted, which is why I think certain formats like live event, which requires the compute, are finally at the right time to be adopted. And they also solve a different problem, which is the problem of content creation. Because if you empower artists, whether they're 5 million bedroom DJs or superstars, to actually perform within a virtual venue, then you could create compelling content to your entire audience without having the technical barriers of having to create your own infrastructure, your own VR applications. So I looked at this really as a lens towards, you know, how do we maximize the strength of this medium, which is one part of it, and how do we provide the infrastructure that's going to allow a creator, whether it's a visual creator or content creator building things in Unreal, because our platform is in Unreal, there's 7 million Unreal Engine developers, or whether it is a music or content creator, from a DJ to a singer to an acrobat. We did an acrobat show in December, to actually use the framework to actually reach out to a global fan base versus a physical audience that's going to your event. So for me, this is a natural progression of the capabilities and the strength of the medium. It's leveraging what it's very good at, and it needs a platform for the creation, the distribution, the monetization, and the cloud rendering of that format. So that's a driving factor as kind of the result of a career and lots of love for that medium. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it's really well said, and it's really smart and interesting. That's how it can get to the masses, the virtual gig model, and artists being able to scale around the world, but giving them a platform to be able to make that content. And I think it makes so much sense. I'm sure most people listening will understand cloud rendering, but if they don't, from my very high level understanding, and you've kind of mentioned it throughout, you know, VR, ideally, if you want it in amazing clarity and it to feel really as immersive as it can, needs computer power to run that. So you may link that to a powerful PC or do that wirelessly, but you can now do that in the cloud. So the average consumer user doesn't need to have a powerful computer setup that can be streamed to them, but still in full immersion and look and feel amazing. Is that the general high level principle?
That's the high level. That's correct. And the computation that you have on a standalone device is by order of magnitude less capable than a modern gaming PC. And VR, by the very definition of being high frame rate and stereo requires huge amount of compute. So you have to have lots of optimization and lots of trade-offs in order to run something that's decent on a standalone device. And so this is why I said earlier, certain use cases like a live event where, you know, you don't have the luxury of having these optimizations because the data is live and because you have a visual expectation, a show, which by definition is visual. You know, with 1,000 lights and lasers and a live performer that looks not like a cartoon, but, you know, a human and a rich environment and lots of users and themselves looking amazing. So all of that takes compute. And so finally, you could have the best of both worlds. You can have that compute in the cloud, and you could have the delivery of that compute in a low latency VR immersive format. So this is really the moment. We're just at the beginning of this. And just, you know, for the tech geek out there, you know, everybody's well aware that the motion to photon for VR is what generates motion sickness. If that latency is too big, then you get sick. And so that's a non-negotiable aspect. So it's legitimate to ask, how could you beat the latency when you've got a computer that's not in your living room, but that's across the cloud? So I think it's currently in the implementation of cloud rendering by a number of players, including CloudXR, which is the solution from NVIDIA. You're essentially sending the tracking information to the computer. It renders it. It sends it back to the user. And then it reads, again, the position of the head mount display and does a reprojection based on the immediate position that the user's head is at with the remote rendered image. So that it absorbs a lot of the latency that's basically the transport of the data and the transport of the rendered frame, right? So the concept of being able to absorb that inside a VR device because you have local tracking information is vital to the ability to provide cloud rendering for an immersive format like VR, where the motion to photon is so critical. So that's one aspect. The current cloud rendering solution that work well are typically right now in the enterprise use case, because you don't have a lot of challenge in the type of content you're sending across. You know, you may be sending a beautiful engine or car, and so there's not a lot of motion. And so the compression framework is not extremely challenging. A use case like Red Pill, where you have lots of moving lights and lots of, you know, complex space and dark pixels very close from one color to the other, provide more challenging compression. And so that's the reason why we worked with a partner, VNova, in the UK on compression framework that is essentially solving some of these quality issues. So we can actually have both the absorption of the latency and the quality that's required to not see the visual degradation with the compression artifacts that you would typically see in the combination of traditional compression framework and a cloud rendering. So, you know, in a nutshell, we are finally getting to a place in as an industry, really, where the cloud rendering that is now starting to be widely adopted, getting lots of traction into the consumer space, can then be relevant into the VR ecosystem. And we're going to see a number of different announcements from a number of different companies that are building infrastructure for cloud rendering for the consumer VR ecosystem. And so that is, in my view, a very important milestone in the adoption of VR, because it will unlock a lot of the pain point in the optimization and in restrictions and type of content that could be made on standalone devices, including, you know, the use case that we're working on.
Yeah, it's really good to understand that. And that's really interesting. And it frames why this moment's really important and why that could be a really huge inflection point, which is cool. I want to spend some time definitely on Red Pill VR and exactly what it is. It's very cool. I've experienced it. I've downloaded it, and you can beta test it now if you've got a computer that works with it well. And but tell us about Red Pill VR. What's the vision? And explain it from a user point of view if you go and join a live show. It's very cool. So I'd love to hear it from you.
I mean, you know, events typically are places you go to, right? You go to Coachella, you go to Burning Man, you go to a concert of your favorite artist. I don't know if you knew, but the average distance people go and travel in the US to go to a festival is 800 miles. So it's a big commitment to go someplace. And you could do that, you know, maybe a couple times a year, 2-3 times. What happened the rest of the time? So the thinking is, let's bring the event to you in the comfort of your living room, in the comfort of your home, but let's not have the trade-off that you currently have on some of the virtual events, because virtual events right now are built on amazing platforms that have been designed for different purposes, like a Roblox, for example. Let's think about what we want for live events, and can we get as close to Ready Player One? Is it possible? Can that actually be live where the performer is actually performing, whether it's a series of acrobats or dance crew or a DJ? So the vision is simple, is how do we make that possible at scale, at a certain level of visual fidelity and a certain level of audio quality, and how do we make it as a platform so creators can build their own virtual venue, they can create hybrid events from the physical event that happened at a festival, at a nightclub, at a circus show, at a comedy show, but deliver that with a certain metrics on what this looks like and what this sounds like, with spatial sound, with super low latency peer-to-peer communication, with organic motion of the performer and the users, with game mechanic where you dance in zero gravity and shrink to 4 inches and have a blade of grass taller than you, with game mechanics that allow you to be in a VIP booth and have an interaction with the performer that you could never have in the physical world. You know, it's really taking things from the physical, the motion of the performer, the DMX show from the light show, the VJ content, the music, obviously, and then translating that inside a gorgeous world that has unlimited scalability where people could jump in on any devices. VR is just the most immersive one. But, you know, if you can do it for VR, you could do it for everything else, including cinematic stream, including PC gaming, including mobile ecosystem. So that's really what, you know, we are building, is the home for that new format, that AAA format of live events, and kind of rethinking the definition of event that's no longer in a physical place only, but that's both physical and virtual, and at both at the time of the event and any other time after, whereby creating a new library of experiential content where you can go back and say, hey, you know, now Luke has his birthday party with Pollock and Fold's last show that just took place on Friday at the Red Pill Studio. And so things like that are going to be possible and they're going to be scalable. So a lot of the pain points, which is what we talked earlier, is the cost of content creation. If you build the infrastructure so content creation is just tech art or just performance, now you've dramatically lowered these barriers. And by changing the distribution with essentially a cloud rendering framework, but delivering AAA visual quality, now you've changed the barrier for the consumers to be accessing amazing virtual content and experiences. So our vision has really been what needs to be done from an infrastructure standpoint to really unlock a new category, thinking about that category first, without taking your technical debt or choices that are inheriting completely different decisions that have been made for a completely different purpose. And I think now with this infrastructure on the cloud rendering, communication and processing, we are at the beginning of that journey. So that's really Red Pill for you.
Yeah, it's amazing, and you framed it so well that it's such a huge opportunity. Like, you think about something like Coachella, and yes, the physical event is amazing. Yes, that's something that everyone wants to still do, of course. But for them to be able to scale, sell tickets to loads of people all around the world to come, and whether it's at the same time that Coachella is running, and have this amazing immersive experience with artists and all the other things that you can do as well, it's a huge opportunity, isn't it? And it's very cool. And yeah, maybe you could describe the actual experiences and events for people as well, because I was going around and I was turning on different features, and you know, there's loads of amazing lights, and I'd encourage people to go and check it out on at least YouTube and watch stuff. But maybe you could, for the user and for the artist as well, who can also be motion captured and actually DJing live as well. So what's it like being at a Red Pill Studio event?
So, I mean, there's two things. There's the physical aspect, and then there's a virtual aspect, right? So the LA studio is designed as a way to evangelize the format. So we have the world's highest resolution 3D LED that we funded, and we wrote all the software stack to drive the content. That's essentially projecting a virtual camera viewpoint of the event with the virtualization of the performer live and all of the users that are fully immersed on different devices, from a full VR setup to a desktop gaming PC, locally at the studio in a bunch of rooms and anywhere around the world that are basically logging in from home with their devices inside the venue. So you're looking at a 3D LED as a physical participant, and you see the physical and you see the virtual and you see all the virtual participants. And at the same time, you see the other performers. You see a VJ that's performing live, that's broadcasting VJ content on an actual LED screens within the virtual world. You see the light operator that does control 3DMX, 1,000 lights and lasers that's driving the light show inside this virtual venue. So you basically have the exact same control that you would have if you had a physical stage, but you do that inside a virtual world. So the physical experience is a hybrid where you essentially take things from the physical world and you see them in the physical world and you see them in the virtual world through a 3D LED. And then anybody else that's at home is essentially being able to log in, let's just say in VR, and have full body control through 3 points tracking. So we do inverse kinematic for the upper body, and we do procedural animation for the lower body. So clearly, if you turn around, the legs are going to follow you. If you jump, you know, your legs are going to detach from the floor. If you knee, they're going to be close to the floor. So we don't have the full body tracking for an actual user, but we drive or deduct the best we can the full body information. And you're essentially immersed inside this shared virtual world where your voice is connected to your position in space. So if you're behind and I turn around, I see you in front and I hear you in front. So we have this shared participation at the very best visual fidelity for the avatar, for the motion of the avatar and for the audio. And then together we are free to roam, play, interact and consume the live performance. That could be any kind of performance. So we have a virtualization pipeline for the DJ that's designed to be low cost and friction free. So there is nothing, no markers, nothing. So we're using basically an AI pose extraction to extract the body information, facial and body movement from a camera in front, from a camera in the back, and from a leap motion that's facing on the deck that's grabbing your fingers and animating them and connecting them to the actual MIDI gears on the DJ deck. And so we grab the MIDI data from the deck themselves, and we do a sensor fusion of all that information. We blend them with some animation when we don't have the data, so it always looks great. And now you've got a markerless multi-sensor DJ performance solution that's completely real-time that you could deploy, right? So that's one type of virtualization, the specialty for DJ. Then you take the event that we did in December with the Seven Fingers show in Montreal. That's different. You have 1,000 people who bought physical tickets, and you have 5 performers that are basically jumping around on trampoline, all kinds of acrobat moves in a singer. But you don't see the motion capture. It's optically tracked, and you have infrared under the clothes. So essentially, it's optically tracked, but you don't wear spandex suits with ping pong balls, right? So you could actually perform in front of a physical audience. And in real time, we extract the motion of these 5 performers with super high fidelity. That gets broadcasted along with the voice into Red Pill's platform, and you can connect anywhere in the world in VR or in other formats and actually see the performance live. And the physical participant get to see the physical performance with a large screen showing the virtual performance, and the virtual participant see the virtual performance with a screen within the virtual world showing the live. So you've got this hybrid that's happening where, again, the intent is not to have two separate worlds, but to unify essentially the various components of a live event, the physical aspect and the virtual aspect, the physical participants and the virtual participants, the physical, the actual performer with an audience that's no longer limited to be physically there. And at the same token, you could have events that are purely virtual. And our bedroom DJ in Berlin can now have a full-on show and there is nobody there in his living room and in his studio, but you could have an unlimited number of fans that are around the world. And so we envision a future where visual artists building beautiful worlds inside Unreal, and performers, musicians, singers, dancers, acrobats, DJs are able to collaborate and build and distribute on a new platform that's designed for live event at a certain level of quality. And so we're building that vision, we're building that infrastructure. There's lots and lots of technologies that we built from scratch or we integrated, like the Unreal Engine 5. And we're on that journey to imagine what that looks like with amazing partners around the world.
Yeah, it's so cool. I'm so glad you're doing it, because I want to come and get stuck in, because it's awesome. This vision of futures is very, very cool. I'm looking at the clock and there's loads of things I want to ask you, but I'm going to ask you just 2 more because I know you're very busy as well. The first one being, you've had some of the biggest DJs in the world, Paul Oakenfold, amongst others, come and do events. What can we look forward to over the next few months for people at Red Pill?
I'm close to be able to announce some of these relationships, but I'm not quite there yet. You can expect some announcements that are going to come, but we we have very exciting conversations for projects that will happen this year, and we can't wait to share. And we also are welcoming developers that are interested in that format to come out and reach out. Unreal Engine content developers that want to push in the same direction that we're pushing. And we're going to open to select developers the platform for them to create virtual venues and distribute and monetize virtual events. I'm not quite ready to talk about some of the next events that are going to happen, but I'm happy to reach out the moment I can make these announcements.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I'll make sure I cover it because it sounds exciting, whoever and whatever is coming. And then the final question is on the hardware stuff. I mean, I feel like there's always these rumors floating around of the Apple headset probably for years, but also the Quest 3 sounds like that is coming. Is there any thoughts there? Is there anything you're excited about? And we talked about the cloud rendering stuff. I don't know if that's coming for those things. Are you able to say anything? And are you excited for those?
I mean, obviously, I'm very excited about, the state of hardware to move forward, because it's obviously a critical component to delivering on the vision. And both these devices, whatever is known, are going to push forward from what's currently available for the consumers. And they're both going to have the capabilities to support the cloud rendering infrastructure and technology we're building. So, we already know some of the specs of the Quest Pro and the Meta Pro. And we can imagine what some of the features of the Quest 3 are going to be. But I think the continuation of reducing the form factor and the balancing of the weight between the front and the back are very important elements. And when you combine that with the ability to deliver AAA visuals cloud rendered, you have a very comfortable experience. I'm an advisor of a company called Subpack that has amazing tactile sound. So putting a Subpack, putting a next generation headsets that's nicely balanced, cloud rendering this, and having a beautiful headphone is basically all you need to have a next level live social experience in the comfort of your living room. This is really around the corner. So we can't be more excited, because it's finally at reach when for so long it just wasn't.
Yeah, I love it. That's a really exciting and good way to finish, for sure. And of course, it will all be in the show notes, but just remind people where they can go to find out more about Red Pill and get involved and keep up with all the awesome work you're doing.
Oh, of course. Come up to redpill.app for downloading the launcher, the Red Pill launcher. And our website is redpillvr.com for any information about the platform and the company.
Love it. Yeah. Well, Lauren, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. Great chat. And it's exciting. So thank you so much.
I'm glad to be on the show, Luke. Thanks so much. I appreciate that.
So there we go. Awesome one with Laurent. We are on the cusp of a big moment for VR. Red Pill very much leading the way for incredible live experiences. And it's going to get very interesting when the new headsets drop as well. So I hope you enjoyed that one. Do reach out and let me know what you thought. Always love to hear from you. It's at Luke_Franks on Twitter. Have a great rest of your week, and I will see you for next week's episode.